Welcome to What the Hex, your source for Warhammer Underworlds and under 30 ritual sacrifices. To give you a little bit of context for our recording today, still the most recent news that we've had is the release of the Crushes and the Blade Coven, although we should be expecting to see Arena Mortis sometime soon because of the roadmap that GW gave us, told us that we would be getting this in September, so we should be seeing that soon. So just to give a little bit of context of where we are. Today's topic, we're going to be talking about Morgwaith's Blade Coven, the other release, since we just covered Crushes, and so should be a fun one. Before we get into the main meat of the topic, some community shoutouts. Quick, wanted to give a shout out to Jonwin Reese over on Critcast. He's been doing a lot of cool content there. Has been providing some really cool webcam games and some fun episodes just talking about individual topics, but I've especially enjoyed, he's been doing a news roundup every month. Gives a nice synopsis of sort of all the Underworlds content that he's been able to gather and sort of put together into one review show to say, here's all the stuff that's happened in this month. So you can sort of see what all has come out. And if you missed anything, go check it out, which has been a cool resource. And then the other is just a show that I've been enjoying. We got Steel City doing their podcast, and I've really enjoyed their Crit Bait episodes. They just released a new one. So yeah, go check those out. They've been fun. They provide a fun back and forth debating sort of a controversial topic in the current Underworlds scene, and presenting both sides of the argument about why or why not it may be considered controversial. And then for our common standing segment of what the hex is going on with you, I obviously have been working on solo recordings. I also restarted our community game night, although virtually now, just to try and get sort of the local folks to be able to reconnect again, even though it's not in person at the local shop like normal. In other news for what the heck's going on, so Davey's obviously still not here with me. You may or may not hear him coming sort of in and out, might be able to pop in for an episode here or there. In fact, the Crit Bait episode I was just talking about, he's on there, so if you'd still like to go listen to Davey, definitely check that out. I will probably also be jumping onto a few other shows with our larger group called The Mortal Realms, where we cover topics more broadly for Age of Sigmar than just Warhammer Underworlds. So if you would like to have some more Warhammer content to listen to, or if you just want to listen to me ramble some more, feel free to jump over there and check it out. We've got all that content over on our website, themortalrealms.com. If you're so inclined, you can also jump over there to pick up some merch. We've got shirts now, so feel free to check those out as well. All right, so with all of that out of the way, all of the hullabaloo taken care of, let's get into the real meat of this episode. So what are we talking about? We got Morgwaiths. So we're going to do similar to last time. We're going to do an overview of the fighters, give you some just a quick rundown of all their objectives, ploys, and upgrades, telling you my opinion on them and sort of a rating between 1 and 5 of how good I think they are, 1 being the worst, 5 being the best. And then at the end, I'll give you some of my ideas of how I think they might play, some of their strengths and some of their weaknesses. So starting with the fighters, we got 5 fighters in this warband. So they're pretty much a middle of the road in terms of numbers. They're slightly larger than average, but 5 is sort of common. You don't really see 4 fighters very often. So 5 is sort of the middle ground. And all of these fighters are very fast. So one thing you'll definitely notice is that the Blade Coven is a fast warband. All of the fighters except for Kyre, I hope I'm pronouncing all of these names right, they're a mouthful. But so the Snake Lady, she starts at 5, everybody else is 4. So you know you're very fast to start with. And then They're all on dodge as well, so they are not quite as innately hard to hit as some warbands. But we'll get into a little bit more of that, because that's pretty much where the similarities end. So starting with Morgwaith herself, she starts on 2 dodge rather than 1, so she is actually pretty hard to hit right off the bat. And she does have 4 wounds, so pretty standard for a leader, but that is nice because it means she's fast, she's relatively hard to hit, and she has a decent number of wounds, so she's probably not going anywhere. And I think there's a good reason for this, because she has the ability called Blood Sacrament, which basically says that whenever an enemy fighter is taken out of action, you can then choose a friendly fighter and inspire them. And then there's some details about the timing of when that takes place, but the basic idea is that she works a little bit like Thundrick, whereas as long as she's alive, you have a way to inspire your fighters. And as soon as she's out, you don't have a great option for inspiring, because the innate inspire condition on all of these fighters is that in the third round, they just inspire. So while you can get your fighters inspired with Morgwaith out, you really do need her to still be on the board. So very important piece, sort of the linchpin, I think, to this whole warband. And then in terms of her combat ability, she's actually pretty good. She's got reach 2, so you like the reach, especially with the high speed. 2 smash for 2 damage. So pretty accurate, decent damage. I mean, it's kind of middle of the road, but the reach 2 makes it nice. And then she also has cleave. So you can definitely use her to really pop some people. And then once she's inspired, the main change is that she goes up to 5 speed, which we'll see across the board pretty much. Everybody gets a little bit faster. And then she gets 1 more damage. So fast, hits hard, very, very strong fighter in my opinion. Then we've got Camis, so the sister of Slaughter. So she's the one with the whip. Like I said, 4 speed. She's only got 1 dodge, so a lot easier to hit to start with. 2 wounds. You get a lot of these fighters in this warband only have 2 wounds. So a little bit fragile. But she does have some nice abilities along with her combat strength. So she has an innate ability that she just can't be driven back, which is nice. I don't know exactly how often you're going to be in a situation where you'd be surviving after an attack when you only have 2 wounds, unless your opponent, if you just tied your opponent. So still useful, but probably won't come up as much as it would if she had more wounds. And then for her attacks, she has a reach 2, 3 fury, 2 damage barbed whip, which that's pretty nice. It's a fairly accurate 2 damage attack at reach. And it's the only fighter that we've seen in the game so far that has innate combo, which is pretty nice. Combo is one of those mechanics that we kind of would have liked to see a little bit more of. There's some cool upgrades that build off of combo, but there just wasn't really a good way to make it work. If you wanted to, you could, of course, then build that into Camis, but she does have an innate, like, built-in reaction that works with combo, and that's her bladed buckler. It's reach 1, 1 smash for 1 damage, so it's not super great, but, you know, you just get to make that attack for free after you make the whip attack. So, an extra chance at doing some damage is always nice. Although you do need to make sure that you're keeping her within reach for the bladed buckler, because obviously with reach 2 on the whip, you could end up trying to combo and not having a target for the buckler. This does, of course, allow for some interesting situations where you could use the whip to hit somebody who's further away and then buckler somebody who's right next to you. I don't know. It just leads for a lot of flexibility. So I think Camis is interesting in that regard. And then when she inspires, again, goes up to 5 speed. She does get an extra dodge, so she goes up to 2 dodge, which is nice, makes her a lot harder to hit. And then the only other change is that her bladed buckler goes to 2 fury for 2 damage instead of the 1 smash for 1. Then we've got Kyrie, who's the innate fast speedster on the team. She's speed 5 to start, which is pretty rare to see, so that's nice to have an innate 5 speed. And then other than that, well, she has 2 dodge and 3 wounds, so she's your sort of secondary tough fighter. So she's sort of your lieutenant, if you will. So she's probably going to be a little bit better than and you're going to rely on her a little bit more than some of the rest of the warband. But I think the thing that you're really going to end up using her for is she's going to be a turret, because the Heartseeker bow that she has is range 4, 3 fury for 1 damage. So pretty normal ranged attack at only 1 damage. Most ranged attacks only do 1 damage. But reach 4 is pretty rare. I think we only have it innately on one other fighter, and that's only inspired. So having a base 4 range is pretty good. And that does have ensnare as well. So pretty accurate attack, especially if you're trying to pick off things like chain rasps. And then she does have a melee attack, a sacrificial knife. Reach 1, 2 fury for 1 damage. I don't know why you'd ever use that. It's far less accurate and is just in no way better than the bow. When she inspires, she gets pretty crazy here. So the Heartseeker bow goes up from 3 fury to 3 smash, so a pretty big jump in accuracy, and she also gains cleave. So now anybody you're attacking isn't going to be able to use their defense die rolls. They're going to be needing to fish for crits. Unfortunately, she still stays at 1 damage, but like it's almost guaranteed to hit, I guess. It's not exactly, but when your opponent needs to roll crits and you've got, what, a 79-ish% chance of rolling a success or something around there, it's pretty good. And then the sacrificial knife does get better, but again, like I'm not sure you're really going to be flying her in to do melee attacks when she's inspired. She goes up to 3 fury and 2 damage, so slightly better, but I think really you just, like I said, sit her back, use her as a turret, you take advantage of having range 4. And with her being speed 5, I mean, keep in mind, she has a threat range of 9, so I mean, you really probably use her for those surgical strikes, go and pick off fighters hiding in corners of the battlefield. And then we get to the Dangle Bros. So we got Kyrsa. Again, hopefully that's how you pronounce that. So 4 speed, 1 dodge, 2 life. So yeah, Dangle Bro territory here. Very easy to hit, very low hit points. It's not great. but she's relatively accurate though. She's got 3 fury for 1 damage on her sacrificial knives, and she has an ability on her sacrificial knives where if you roll a crit, she does get plus 1 damage. So if you really have to, you can sort of dive with her and try and spike some damage with crits. And when she inspires, like most of the rest of the human or elf, I guess, fighters in this warband, she does increase her speed to 5. She does gain an additional dodge, so faster, harder to hit, but otherwise stays exactly the same. So I think the Dangle Bro, this is sort of Dangle Bro 1, right? You got, she's not horrible, but she's definitely not your first target for an inspiration. And then we got Lethir, who's your Dangle Bro 2. She has the exact same starting stats as Kyrsa, but doesn't have the crit burst damage. So she's just 4 move, 1 dodge, 2 health with 3 fury, 1 damage attack. That's all she's got going for, which is pretty bad. But she's very interesting when she inspires. So again, like everybody else, 5 speed, 2 dodge. But then she also has a special ability on the sacrificial knives where if she rolls 2 or more successes when she makes her attack, the attack, if it succeeds, resolves the deal damage step twice. So essentially she's doubling her damage, but because of the way it's worded, where you resolve the deal damage twice rather than just doubling the damage characteristic, you can benefit from any sort of damage upgrades multiple times. So if you had just give her a plus 1 strength, so you just put a great strength on her, if she rolls 2 successes and succeeds, that attack's going from 2 damage to 4 damage. So while she is probably the worst fighter at the beginning of the game, she gets pretty scary for the amount of damage that she can spike just sort of randomly. And I think that's the main problem, is that it is random, but it does add some value to her once she is inspired. So there are some situations where you might just choose to inspire her and then like throw on a potion of rage and go nuts and try and spike huge damage, but overall I do feel like Krissa and Lethier are probably the ones you save for last for inspiration, and then Camus, Kyrie, and Morgwaith are sort of the more important targets there. But that's all the fighters. As you could, you know, imagine, they're fast, they're fragile, they're very furious. They want to get in people's faces, they want to deal damage, but they can't really take it back. And with that sort of rundown of the fighters themselves, let's jump into their objectives. So the first one that we've got here, we've got Perfect Kill. So this is a surge, and it is a surge where you score it immediately when a friendly fighter's attack action deals exactly enough damage to take the fighter out of action, and you get one glory. This is just a reprint of an old objective that we used to have. And it's pretty great. More often than not, you are probably not overkilling your opponents. You're especially with this fighter warband, where you're doing one or two damage on most of your attacks, you're probably more often than not just dealing the exact amount of damage that you need. So this is effectively just get a kill, get an extra glory, which is always great. So I'm giving that one a 5. Just because I think it meshes so well with what you want to do. Although any upgrade or any objectives that are aggro based are slightly less reliable than passives, so you know there is some downside to that, but I still think it's a very strong aggro objective. All right, and then we've got Devoted Disciple. Now this one is just passive. This one is also, I think, very strong. I'm putting this at a 5 because it feels to me like an in-faction calculated risk. It basically just says, score this in an end phase if one or more surviving friendly fighters have one or more wound tokens. So if you get this in your first hand, you just run somebody through a lethal as your fourth activation, and you get a glory. Like, that's pretty good. But it also means that, you know, if anybody just gets, like, plinked with Snare or you know, any of those cards that just do one damage off of a ploy, you could score this off of that too. I mean, there's so many different ways that this could get scored, but the main point is that it's something that's probably going to happen in the game anyway, and so just being able to pick up one glory for just something that happens organically is always pretty strong. Next we've got Consecrate to Cain. Little less enthusiastic about this one. So this is score immediately when a friendly fighter's range 1 or 2 attack action. So you can't do this with the bow, which kind of sucks. Takes an enemy fighter holding an objective out of action. That's for 1 glory. So in theory, if you're facing a lot of people who like to hold objectives, you could score this very easily because you kind of know they're just going to be hanging their fighters out on objectives, but it still requires setup from your opponent. You probably are not going to be spending things like distractions to force an opponent onto an objective just so that you can kill them on an objective. So there is some downside to trying to play this because it's not always going to happen, but it is relatively easy if you know the matchup. So I'll give that a 3, maybe leaning all the way up to a 4 depending on the meta, but I think generally it's a 3. It's just not super consistent. Slightly better, maybe, than Consecrate to Cain is Bloodrite. So you score this immediately when a friendly fighter is holding an objective, making an attack action that takes an enemy fighter out of action. So this is a little easier to set up because it's based on where your fighters are positioned rather than where your opponent's fighters are positioned. But the problem then is you do have to have a way of killing an enemy fighter while standing on an objective. This isn't always hard. Sometimes, you know, your opponent just happens to be standing next to an objective, so you could just charge in and kill somebody while you're standing there. I think Morgwaith and Kyrie both have easier ways to do this because they both have reach. I guess theoretically you could even do it with Camus's whip as well. It also has reach. So this is slightly better. Still only one glory. Still requires positioning, so it's not like an automatic golden objective, but certainly not bad. Again, probably 3, maybe leaning up to a 4. Probably closer to a 4 on this one than Consecrate to Cain. And unfortunately, that's sort of the the bulk of the strong objectives for this warband in their in-faction objectives. So the next one we've got is Torturous Death. Another score immediately. This is a reprint of some generics as well, where you score this after you make a third or subsequent attack action that targets the same enemy fighter this phase. So, you know, you do have a lot of these fighters that don't have very many, that don't deal a lot of damage. You do have a bunch of ways to get multiple attacks in a single phase, so not super hard with this warband, but you also kind of don't want to have to rely on doing lots and lots of attacks. It's just inefficient. So, I mean, I put this at a 3 just because I think it's still fairly easy to do, but I don't know that it in the long term really helps you to spend a lot of time doing attacks that do little or no damage to a single fighter. And that's for one glory as well. Then we've got Swift Sacrifice. This one's pretty easy, except for the restrictions on it. So it's a surge to score immediately when a friendly leader or Kyrie make a range 1 or 2 attack action and take an enemy fighter out of action. So killing an enemy fighter is not always super hard, but the fact that you have to do it with Morgwaith or Kyrie, and it has to be with a melee attack, it suddenly becomes much tougher to do. If it was just straight up score this if a leader or Kyrie kills an enemy fighter with an attack action, I definitely feel that this was very strong. But as it is, I'd put this swift sack 3 probably for me. Maybe lower, but I think probably 3 is okay for this. You're probably going to be wanting to get kills with Morgwaith anyway, so this is probably okay. But for one glory, it's not super great. And then we've got Purposeful Strike. So this is an interesting one. This starts to show some of the things that you'll see later on, that this warband leans a little bit into holding objectives, which you maybe wouldn't expect because of their sort of fragile stat lines. So this one is an end phase where if a friendly fighter with a charge token is holding an objective, you can score this for one glory. So of course the problem with this is that you had to have charged onto an objective token and then still be surviving holding that objective token at the end. There are some other ways you could get the charge tokens if you wanted to, but you know, using ploys to give yourself charge tokens isn't really something you're probably going to want to do with this warband. But you could use Kyrie to maybe do this fairly easily because of that range 4 bow, and you know, it's not exactly a super hard way to score. And as you'll see later, there are some ways you could lean into hold objective play. So maybe you put this in there. I'm sort of leaning that this would be probably 3 because it's not super hard to get. But you know, if you're not leaning into the objective play, probably not that high. Maybe down to a 2. Then we have Daughters of the First Temple, and this is score in an end phase if 2 or more enemy fighters are out of action. So this is one of those cards where on the face of it, it seems like, oh, well, killing 2 fighters, that's probably not super hard. Except for when, you know, you're facing Stormcast, or if you're facing the Rip of Snarlfangs, or you're facing the Morgox Crushes, where suddenly getting 2 kills is quite a lot of work. So for one glory, the amount of work that goes into this card could vary dramatically depending on your matchup. So I don't personally like these cards very much because there's going to be a lot of matchups where this is super difficult. So I'm putting it at a 2. Depending on your meta, you might say that this is a lot better or worse, but I think generally speaking, if you look at the full range of warbands, it's not that great. Then we got the Blessings of Cain. So also an end phase, and this is if you have 2 or more friendly fighters that are inspired. This is for one glory. This is effectively fired up, except you need 2 fighters, which I think is, you know, it's not super great. It's not exactly hard to do, although given how fragile the warband is, trying to have 2 fighters survive to the end phase well inspired may not always be easy. So personally, I put this one at a 2 as well. Just because it's a little more risky than something that I'd like to play, and given that you could just put in fired up instead of this, I think is definitely something that lowers the value here. Now, of course, keep in mind, rotation's coming soon. Fired Up is going to be going away in the rotation. So something like this may actually hold more value post-rotation than it does today. So, you know, take the rating currently with a bit of a grain of salt. Then we got Ritualized Formation. This is just an in-faction supremacy. So just hold three objectives in the end phase and get three glory. Normally, I'd say that's great. You like to have supremacy if you're going to be holding objectives, but I personally think it's going to be a little weird to hold objectives with this warband because, again, very fragile. You have three fighters with only two wounds. It's going to be very difficult to just sit on objectives and not get killed off of them or even just get pushed off of the objectives. So I don't know how many times you're going to want to double up on supremacy. Of course, they are very fast, so there is the potential that you could just swarm the board similar to how Skaven sometimes run for objectives and just grab all the objectives very quickly so that your opponent then doesn't have time to push you off of all of them or kill you off of all of them. But unlike Skaven, you can't bring any of your fighters back. So if you draw this late in the game, it's probably just a dead card. So I think, you know, this might be actually pretty decent if you can find ways to make hold objective play work with them. But I think personally, I put this again at a 2 just because it's a little bit too much work for what it's worth. Then we've got Proof of Devotion. So this is a third end phase hybrid, which, you know, immediately to me, a third end phase card, it's going to have a huge payout to be of much value. And I don't think this one's payout is really all that great. So you have to have all enemy fighters out of action or hold all the objectives in enemy territory. Both of those things are not easy to do. Now, this is for 3 glory, but, you know, killing all enemy fighters in an enemy warband is, you know, that's annihilation and that's worth 5. So if you think you're going to be able to do that consistently, I would say just take annihilation. And if you think you're going to be able to hold all the objectives in enemy territory, then I suppose this is probably still worth your while, but I think that's going to be very difficult to manage unless you have gotten to place 3 objectives in your territory or if you've got some ways to limit the number of objectives in your opponent's territory. But generally speaking, I don't see this as being very easy. And then because it's a third end phase, you may just not have enough fighters to hold all the enemy objectives at the end of the third round. So while 3 glory is decent, 3 glory in the third end phase, there are easier things you could be scoring. So I give that one a 2 as well. And then this final one, which I'm a little bit mixed on, in practice, it may be a little bit better than what I'm thinking it would be, but this is Triumphant Stance, which is a duel. This is scored in the end phase if one friendly fighter is holding an objective and no other fighters are holding objectives. So you really have to make sure that there's only ever going to be just that one fighter holding an objective to be able to score this. And it is for 2 glory, but I do think that most warbands currently are going to be in some way standing on objectives, whether it's because they want to deny objectives to you or your opponents, or if it's because, you know, they're just trying to score, you know, holding objectives themselves. So I think this is going to be really difficult to do. Personally, I'm putting it at a 1 because I just don't see how you're ever going to score it. But there are the, you know, potential lucky matchups where you could just be the only one who is caring about holding objectives, and you might just luck out on that and get 2 glory in an end phase, which would be pretty great. But I think there are more reliable options. And that's all their objectives. And I don't feel that they had a lot of really strong objectives. I think really the only ones that I would always reach for are Perfect Kill and Devoted Disciple. And otherwise, I think it would really depend on how you're building out the rest of the deck as to whether I would take any of the rest of these in-faction objectives. So I don't think objectives are a strong suit for this warband. However, ploys, I think, are a strong suit for this warband. I think they've got quite a few good ones. So we'll start with Headlong Fury. I love this card. I think it's amazing. I wish it was in more warbands. So this is choose one inspired friendly fighter. So there are, you know, it's slightly restricted, but you then get to make a move action with that fighter, and then you do not give them a move token for that action. So a free move to any inspired fighter, which, given how fast you are, could completely change the complexion of a turn. I mean, extra movement, I think, is always good. We play things like Spectral Wings as a super strong ploy where we would want to give two extra movement, and this is effectively saying, you know, Spectral Wings, but it's plus four or plus five movement, depending on which fighter you move. So I think this is really, really good. And if you have, you know, objectives that score off of making a move action, you can even score off of this card. So definitely a five in my book. Then we've got Fanatical Faith. This is a card that's been used in both Khorne Warbands before, where the first time a friendly fighter is dealt any amount of damage, that damage is they are only ever dealt one damage instead. I love this card. The versions of this that have been in Khorne Warbands have been in every single deck that I've ever built for the Khorne Warbands, because it's just so disruptive to guarantee that you'll only take one damage in the next activation. The two main uses that I find for this is either you make a crazy dive because you think, if this goes off, I basically win the game, and then if I don't get this to go off, well, at least I know that fighter will live to see the end of the round, potentially. So I like Fanatical Faith for sort of those suicide runs. And then also, if you see your opponent building up for a big attack, I love to just drop Fanatical Faith and then kill those cards. So another five from the ploys, and I think that one's super great. Then we've got Catechism of Murder. You do need to have Morgwaith alive to use this ploy, so slightly restricted, but it's just a free inspire. So very strong. I personally think five. You may think slightly less, but I think given the difficulty of inspiring and how much it benefits these fighters, I think this is going to be something you probably want in all of your decks. And to be honest, it's, while it is restricted to having Morgwaith alive, I think if Morgwaith is dead, you're probably feeling pretty badly about the game anyway, so I don't really see this as being restricted anyway. So another five, something I would probably always take just because getting inspired is a pretty big boost. Then we got Zealot's Rage. This is a pretty common reaction ploy that we see in a lot of different warbands, but it's always good. And this is one where after a friendly fighter's attack action that fails, you can then make an attack action with that fighter. So this is pretty great. It just lets you improve accuracy. Nice thing is that you don't have to make the same attack action again. You don't have to even target the same fighter again. You just get to make an attack action, so there's a lot of flexibility here. There's some fun combos you can do with, what's her name? Camus, with the whip. So you could whip and then buckler, and then if you miss with the buckler, you could then whip again, and then because it's a combo, you could then buckler again. There's some silly stuff you can do with Zealot's Rage, but generally speaking, this is really good. Personally, I think this is probably a five. I think you probably always take this. If you're not leaning as much into aggro, you might bring this all the way down to a four, but I think it's still either a four or a five. I think it's very strong. You're always probably going to make some attacks during a game, so having a way to try and make sure that those attacks land is always strong. Then we've got Perfect Precision. This just lets you make a reroll in the next friendly fighter's attack action. It's not bad. It's nothing special, but, you know, extra accuracy is always pretty good. I give that a three, sort of middle of the road, but it's not bad. Drilled to Perfection, I'm a little unsure of this card. I personally, because I feel like this warband is fragile and probably leans kind of heavily into aggro, I'm not super sold on this. However, it may be better in practice than what I'm thinking. And so what this allows you to do is that you choose a friendly fighter and up to one friendly fighter, and you can give them guard tokens. So guard tokens are obviously pretty good because they'd stop you from being driven back, makes you a lot harder to hit. And on any of these fighters, once they're inspired, since you'd have two dodge, going up to two dodge while on guard is actually making you very difficult to hit. So there is some use here, but like I said, they're fragile enough that I'm not sure that defensive ploys are really where you want to be spending your time. I'm going to put that at a three just because I think there's some flexibility there with hold objective play, but I'm not 100% sure of that. I might say down to a two. And that's pretty much the super strong ones. I think all of those could find good homes in most decks for this warband. I think there's a lot of use there. The rest of these are probably a lot more niche. So we'll start with Carver Rune. This is a reaction ploy that during a friendly fighter's attack action that's range 1 or 2, that succeeds before dealing any damage. If there was one or more crits in the attack roll, you can gain a glory point. So free glory as long as you can roll crits in a successful attack. You know, if you're Jonwin Rhys, this card's probably great because you know you're going to be rolling all those crits. But for the rest of us mortals, I don't know how much you want to rely on this card. Free extra, and it is spent glory, so I guess you do need to be really cognizant of that. It raises your score, but you're not going to get any objectives or upgrades off of this. But extra glory just for making a successful attack is pretty great. I suppose you could think of this as an objective in your ploys, where you could say this is an objective that scores for one glory as a surge, as long as you make a successful attack action with a crit. I don't know that I would put that objective in my objective deck either, so I'm sort of torn between a 2 or a 3 on this, I think, because of the unreliability. I'd put it more at a 2. And then we got Bloodbane Venom, similar sort of thing. It's a reaction, so during an attack action, before any sort of, or let's see, so it's during a range 1 or 2 attack action, you roll 3 attack dice, and for each roll of a crit on those 3 dice, the target of that attack action is dealt 1 damage. This one's definitely a 2 for me, because if you do the math, you know that you're getting, on average, a half a point of damage off of this ploy, which means that, you know, basically 50% of the time this card does nothing. So I don't personally like it all that much, but if you really want to sort of lean into just rolling crits, there's the potential, you know, you could add 3 damage with this ploy. That's not crazy. And I think more often than not, what you're looking at is for this ploy to be plus 1 damage, which isn't, you know, it's good. It's not horrible. And it is a reaction, so you only use it when you want to. It's not like something you put down and hope that works. You just wait to use it for when you need it. It's also a poison. So, you know, if you really want to try to lean into the whole poison thing, then maybe. But personally, I'd put this at a 2 as well. Then we've got Incredible Agility. This lets just Kyrae. Oh no, friendly fighters other than Kyrae treat lethal hexes as normal hexes and can move through occupied hexes, but cannot end their move in occupied hexes. So there's already a few universal cards like this. I don't personally see a huge amount of use for this. I guess if you're trying to get to objectives or something, maybe being able to reposition through enemy fighters and run over lethal hexes could be good, but I think there's better ways you could do similar things. You can probably find ways to not even need to worry about this, given most maps and how they get laid down. So I personally would just put this down at a 2 or maybe even a 1. I just don't see a lot of use for this. And then Crimson Rejuvenation, which I think is definitely the worst ploy in the bunch. You get to heal 1 each friendly fighter within 2 hexes of your leader. So obviously this has the potential to be a lot of healing, but on a warband that's super, super fragile, I'm not sure how often you're going to have fighters that you can even heal, because they're probably just dead instead. And it is restricted. You need to have Morgwaith alive to use this. So again, this is pretty low down. I would put this at a 1. I don't see much use for this. I can't imagine having a lot of fighters that will benefit from this, as opposed to other ploys. And so that's all the ploys that they've got. Like I said, you've got a number of really strong ones in here, from, you know, extra movement to completely reducing damage down to 1, free inspires, re-rolling your attacks, basically. Some really strong stuff, and then a few things that are not as good. But I think generally, if you're going to be using in-faction cards for these decks, it's really going to come from those ploys that I think are quite strong. All right, and then we get into upgrades. I don't think there's really any super strong standout upgrades here, but we'll run them down quick just to see if you disagree. So first one here is Victor of 1,000 Duels. This is an upgrade where it gives you a reaction where after a range 1 attack action that targets the fighter and fails, before they get driven back, you can roll an attack dice. And on a hammer or crit, so 50% chance, the fighter is not driven back, and then can make an attack action, any attack action, not one on this card or anything. It's just any of their attacks, and then it must target the attacker. So this could be very scary on somebody like Morgwaith, who has reach, and then you could theoretically juice her defense to make it very hard for her to be hit, and then every time she gets attacked and they miss, you do have this opportunity to try and hit back. This could be very good, but it is random. You may never roll the hammers or crits when you need them, so you may never get any use out of this. It also requires that people actually miss you, which they may just not do, and given how fragile the warband is, I don't know how much mileage you'll get out of this. I'm thinking this is probably a 4, even just as a deterrent from being attacked, because people may not want to risk getting hit back. But overall, I just don't see this as being super strong. Also, the fact that it only triggers off of range 1 attacks means that people may just sit back and hit you from 2 spaces away and just never have to deal with this. So again, 4, because I think it might have some deterrent use, but overall I don't think it's super strong. Then we've got Invigorated Attack. I think this one's pretty decent. Sort of lends itself to, again, the whole objective play. So this is an upgrade where you have +1 dice to your attacks while holding an objective. So there's a number of different ways you could make this work for you. I think if you really wanted to lean into some of those hold objective cards that are in the faction objectives, you could make use of this. And +1 dice on just flat is always pretty nice. So I think this is also a 4. I think it's situational, but I think that's a good thing. It sort of limits how crazy the extra accuracy can be. Then we've got Death Dancer. This is another reaction. This one is pretty much the same as some of the... there's some universals that are basically the same thing, but this is after this fighter's attack action, not as part of a super action. It's just to sort of clean up some of the stuff there where you can't use this during a scything attack. You then can push the fighter 1 hex. With a number of fighters with range, this can actually be pretty good. I think putting Death Dancer on Kyrie with that range 4 attack could be really nice, getting a lot of pushes, allowing you to sort of reposition while shooting people. You could do this with Morgwaith with reach 2. You could, you know, there's a decent amount of use for getting a bunch of free pushes. You could even use this just as a +1 speed bump if you knew that you wanted to get to like an objective, but you couldn't quite reach it. So you charged, attacked somebody, and then pushed the 1 extra hex that you need. So I think there's a lot of use for this. I'd put it at a 4, but it's situational, so not an auto include. You then have Crimson Shard. This is restricted to Morgwaith, so automatically anything that is restricted to a single fighter is already gonna get a down bump, for at least from me. I think there's just lots of really strong things that you could be including that are not restricted. And you, with this, get a reroll for 1 of your attack dice in a friendly fighter's attack rolls for range 1 or 2. So, not only is it restricted, but then it's only a reroll 1 dice, so there's other ways you could get reroll 1 dice as well. I don't think this is bad. I think it's a 3. I think there's plenty of use for a reroll, but I think there's probably other accuracy bumps that you could be including that are generic, so that in case Morgwaith goes down, you could still use the upgrade. Then we've got Whirling Whip. This is an upgrade restricted to Camus, so again, not as good because it's restricted. And it's essentially just a scything attack for her that's at 3 fury and 2 damage. So it's not bad. If you really want to have the option to scythe, this could be good, but I think most of the time attack upgrades are not super great in this warband just because they already have some pretty strong attacks built in. So I'd put this at a 2 probably. You probably don't really need this. Camus probably doesn't really need to be going and jumping in the middle of a whole bunch of enemy fighters given that she's pretty fragile. But, you know, depending on your meta, you may decide that you need more ways to deal with swarms. We've got Rune of Slaughter. So this is similar to some of the stuff that you had in the ploys where you get bonus damage for the number of crits you roll in the attack roll. And this is limited to range 1 and 2 attack actions. So you can't take advantage of this with Kyrae's bow, which is unfortunate because that could actually be really good. Obviously, getting +1 damage when you roll crits is not terrible. We do already have a generic that does that. And this one is for each crit. So if you do happen to roll multiple crits, you could spike your damage pretty nicely. But again, it's just not very likely that you're going to get crits, so you don't necessarily lean on this all that hard. I think where you do, you know, the generic version, you like that putting it on a fighter with ranged attacks, because there's not many ways to get damage bonuses for ranged attacks. For this one, though, it has to be with those melee attacks, and there's just way, way more reliable ways to get bonus damage. So I'd put this at a 2 again, just because it's not consistent enough, but it could be fun if you just wanted to really lean into rolling crits and just spiking damage all over the place. It could be just a fun way to play. And then we've got another restricted one, High Oracle's Butcher. This is restricted to Kyrie. And this is after this fighter's attack action that takes an adjacent enemy fighter out of action, you can gain an additional glory point. So obviously having sort of a built-in Tome of Offerings or trophy belt in your warband is good, but having it be restricted to your ranged fighter, whose melee attack is pretty bad, isn't great. Obviously, it doesn't say that you have to use a ranged one or two attack action to get the kill. It just says they have to be adjacent when they're taken out of action. So you could still shoot somebody with the bow while adjacent and get this, but overall I don't think this is going to come up that often. I think with Kyrie you're probably going to want to be sitting back more often than not, so I'd put this down at a 2, probably maybe a 1, just because it's very niche use, but extra glory can be really strong, so I stick to a 2. Then we've got Rune of Cain. Again, restricted. It's restricted to Morgwaith. And this is one of those ones where when she dies, before you remove the fighter, all adjacent enemy fighters are dealt to damage. Personally, I think that's really bad. It's like super bad in the sense that you would, one, need to be spending an upgrade slot to maybe know that Morgwaith is going to die, and then having to gain much benefit from this, you'd have to put Morgwaith in a situation where she'd be surrounded by multiple enemy fighters, and like, you don't just suicide run your linchpin fighter. So I just see this as a 1. I don't see why you'd ever use that, unless you were just trying to have a weird, crazy suicide bomb sort of strategy there. Then we've got Rapturous Defense. Plus 1 defense is really nice. That's a strong upgrade, but unfortunately it's restricted to Kairissa and Lethier. And since they're your Dangle Bros, I don't know how often you want to be spending upgrade slots on your Dangle Bros. Generally, I would never do so in any warband, but because of the sort of damage spike that Lethier has, I maybe consider this just to keep her alive to be able to take advantage of the double damage thing, but I still think it's not very good. I'd still probably put it at a 1, but maybe a 2. You might be able to have some use for it. And then finally, we've got the Crone Blade. This one's not restricted, so it is slightly better, but it isn't super useful. So it is 3 Fury at range 1 for 2 damage, which isn't horrible. And it does have a reaction where after that attack action, if it succeeded, you do get to heal the fighter 1. But as we've mentioned multiple times throughout this episode, that these fighters are very fragile. I don't know how many times you're going to have a situation where they've taken just 1, or in the case of Kyrie and Morgwaith, 2 damage, where you'd be able to benefit from healing. So overall, I don't think this is great. If you just need an improved attack characteristic for one of your Dangle Bros, or if you want to give Kyrie a better melee attack to benefit from some of the other stuff that's going on here, there are better options. Like, I think Emberbone weapons come to mind, or Nullstone weapons before the rotation would all be decent options if you wanted just an attack upgrade. The flavor text on this one's pretty fun though, so I would definitely say look that up. But other than that, I can't say that there's too much benefit in having that in your deck. So definitely putting that one at a 1 as well. And that's all the cards. That's all the objectives, ploys, and upgrades for Morgwaith's Blade Coven. As just a quick recap, as we sort of mentioned, there were not really any super strong options in the upgrades. There were three, maybe four, that I thought in the ploys were super strong. We had the Headlong Fury, Fanatical Faith, Catechism of Murder, and Zealot's Rage that I would put all at a five. So you've got four of your 10 in-faction ploys that I think could always find a spot in a deck. So I think that's really good. And then in the objectives, there were two, Perfect Kill and Devoted Disciple, that I think could find a way into pretty much any deck. So not a huge number of like guaranteed strong cards, but lots of really good ploys, which I think is actually something you like to see. You do want some strong ploys, and not, I think you'd also like to see a lot of strong objectives within a faction, but just having two is probably pretty good still. So I think overall the balance of their cards is decent. Their upgrades are probably their weakest point, but they definitely have decent cards. It's not, there's no like lack of options within their faction cards. So some quick play style strengths and weaknesses. So I personally think that these gals lead to a aggro play style. Now, whether that's pure aggro or a hybrid, I think is really up to personal taste. But I think because of their speed and because of some of their decent attack profiles, once they're inspired, they can really be sort of those fast, hard-hitting fighters. So they'll feel a little bit, I think, like Blood Reavers to a certain extent, although they don't have somebody like Sake who can come in and smash somebody before he's inspired for 3 damage. So you do have to keep that in mind. If you were to lean into the hybrid play, I think they'd be hybrid with objective holding. And I think that might be the way I would go with them most often. It gives you some ways to sort of hang back, build up some glory to get them in some upgrades and maybe get a fighter inspired before you have to really commit and charge in to try and start cutting everybody up. And I think in doing that, it will probably garner some better results than you would if you just charged everybody forward, because they are so fragile that if you charge them forward without much buildup, I think a lot of them will just die before they really are able to accomplish much. Of course, if you wanted to, I think you could lean even more heavily into the objective play and really try to play them as an objective warband and then just benefit from their strong aggro profiles. However, I think, as I've mentioned many times by now, because of how fragile they are, I don't know how effective that would really be. You may need to practice that a bit before I could even make a real judgment as to how it's going to be, but just on paper, from what I'm seeing, I'm thinking they're going to have a hard time with that. So strengths that sort of lead into those play styles, obviously base 4 move on everybody except for Kyrie means they can get pretty much wherever they want. They're very, very fast. And once they inspire, they're all up to speed 5, which is really good. They do have some decent attacks. Between Morgwaith, Camus, and Kyrie, you've got Cleave and Ensnare, and then also you have the option to get those multiple attacks from Camus's Barbed Whip, which allows you to deal a surprising amount of damage if you have even just a +1 damage upgrade. And then, well, Kyrissa and Lethier are definitely your weakest fighters, they also have some ways to do some burst damage. +1 damage for Kyrissa's Sacrificial Knives, or getting Lethier inspired so she can deal her damage twice, means that even your two weakest fighters have the potential to really put out a lot of damage, and it may even be surprising how much damage they can put out at some of the time. So I think those are sort of their strengths that lean into their being able to play aggro or aggro flex. I think their weaknesses, they're relatively low hit points, and starting out all except for Kyrie and Morgwaith on 1 dodge means that you could very quickly lose 3 of your fighters and then be sort of up a creek because you don't have a strong way to make sure that you can then get the amount of work done that's needed to still be able to score your objectives and kill off your opponent's fighters. So I think you have to be very cognizant of the fact that they can't really take a hit. And then their inspire mechanic, to a certain degree, is a bit of a weakness. You do have to get kills to inspire, Either that or just wait until round three. And if you're only inspiring in round three, you're probably not doing very well. So there is a little bit of a problem there if you go into somebody who's really hard to kill, like Wormspat, or if you're going into, say, Morgox, who have all got five wounds. The thing that compounds that weakness to a certain extent is that a lot of the fighters are not very strong, just base. I think, like, a good example is obviously Kyrissa and Lethier. You know, they're only one damage, and you really don't have a great way to improve that damage until they're inspired, except through rolling crits. Kyrie only also deals one damage, so you're probably more often than not having a difficult time early in the game finding damage to get kills if you're fighting warbands with fighters who have more than two wounds base. Obviously, Morgwaith and Camus can deal out pretty decent hits, so you probably are having to lean on them a little bit more heavily in the early parts of the game. Camus, because she can make multiple attacks, and Morgwaith, because her damage is actually decent. So you do, I think that's where the flex play sort of helps, because you can build up your fighters to make them stronger before you have to send them in. So I think that's sort of the strengths and weaknesses. But overall, I would say I think they're a pretty strong warband. I think they'll be a little tougher to play than some. I probably would not recommend this as a first warband if you're just getting into the game, but I think they should be fun. I think there should be a lot of tactical play with them, and I think they should be pretty rewarding for players who want to spend the time learning how to take advantage of them. And that's our review of Morgwaith's Blade Coven. And so, if you would like to get in touch with us for future episodes, you can reach out to us on Twitter at WhatTheHeck, or at WTHCast, and at WhatTheHeckCast@gmail.com. And like I said at the beginning of this episode, you can feel free to check out any of our other content over at TheMortalRealms.com. That is for things like book reviews, story phase for the story of the different AOS armies, and any other sort of content related to Age of Sigmar. As always, just thanks for listening. Thanks for continuing to hang in there with us as we do these sort of non-standard episodes during this pandemic. Really appreciate continuing to have the support of the community to be able to keep doing this. And definitely just really hope to be able to keep putting out more stuff. Coming up here, I believe that the next thing that I'll be doing is a review for the new Arena Mortis expansion, which I expect to see coming out fairly soon, because it is supposed to land sometime in September, but we'll see what happens with that. And then, as always, your recommended listening for this episode is The Matriarch by Unleash the Archers. For What the Hex, I've been Phil. Thanks again for listening.